From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly program on New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. I'm Don Decker, sitting in this week for Alan Shartok, who spent the week at the Democratic Convention in Atlanta. We'll be hearing from him later on. The convention, it's taken up much of the news this week. We'll hear from some New York State delegates as well as Governor Cuomo. Also, the governor took a break from the convention to come back to Albany and finish up state business. And a New York congressman who has served in 20% of the counties in the state made a surprising announcement that stirred a lot of controversy in the political world. These stories and much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. Governor Michael Dukakis of Massachusetts is now the official Democratic candidate for president. The convention in Atlanta concluded this week following a rousing speech by Dukakis, ending up on a note of apparent party unity. However, the week had a rocky beginning and was marked by protests tied to New York State. Beth Engler has our story.
The New York State delegation, second largest in the nation, headed by Lawrence Kerwin, cast 194 votes for Dukakis and 97 votes for the Reverend Jesse Jackson during nominating procedures in Atlanta. The total tally gave Dukakis 2,876 votes to 1,218 for the prominent black clergyman. And there were continued bids for party unity as some Dukakis delegates threw their support behind Jackson in a tribute to his long campaign. However, earlier in the week, as the curtain went up on the convention, all eyes were focused on a conflict between the Jackson supporters and the Dukakis camp. Jackson delegates felt snubbed by Dukakis's choice of Lloyd Bentsen of Texas as his running mate after Jackson had waged such a popular campaign. At the time, New York State President of the NAACP and Jackson delegate Hazel Dukes spoke with Alan Shartok and was asked if she saw herself as a mediator in the Jackson-Dukakis conflict.
Absolutely. That's the art of politics, is compromising. This is my fifth time to Democratic. Don't forget, I supported Walter Mondale in 1984. I was not a Jackson delegate. And my people understood I supported Carter over my friends who supported Kennedy. I support on principles and issues of a man. And after it's over, whoever I support, I'm a Democrat. And that's my reason to be a voice of reason here. I will be playing that role as a mediator. I will be having my say-so as a mediator. I will be putting issues to debate and discuss, which is larger than Jackson or Dukakis.
Hazel, you don't see any problem in achieving this?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I see no problem in it. The problem is that we sit and listen. And listen to reason and look beyond ourselves and look beyond the bigger goal, which is capturing the White House for the people of America.
Hazel Dukes, New York State President of the NAACP. The two camps eventually got together, and by the time the keynote address was delivered, there was apparent peace. The keynote address was delivered by Ann Richards of Texas, and while the New York delegates gave her high marks for her efforts, many said she did not upstage Governor Cuomo's address to the party's gathering in 1984. As for Cuomo, he said he thought that Texas State Treasurer did a great job with her speech. As examples of the views of some state delegates, Assemblyman Angelo Del Toro of Manhattan said he didn't think Richards' speech was as good as Cuomo's. He said Cuomo's had more vision of where the country should go. And Josephine Davenport of Hamburg, a Dukakis delegate, said she thought Richards was fantastic. She added it was hard to compare her speech to Cuomo's because they were very different. Governor Cuomo played no formal role at the convention, and the governor, who has time after time been mentioned as a presidential candidate, said he was not sorry he wasn't a candidate for president or vice president.
Regrets? I already have much more than I feel I have earned, am entitled to, and certainly ever expected. The minute I allowed myself to feel any regret about not having more, then I would deserve the most awful kind of psychic punishment.
Governor Mario Cuomo. Meantime, the Tawana Brawley case, that political headache for New York officials at home, played a part. About 50 supporters of the black teenager forced state Democratic officials to close a meeting of the New York delegation. Protesters briefly scuffled with police outside the door of the meeting room. The incident left many prominent Jesse Jackson delegates angry. The Brawley protest also sparked a counter-demonstration of sorts when a group of New York City delegates began to sing the sidewalks of New York as Brawley protesters chanted nearby. Representative Gary Ackerman of Queens said Sharpton and Company put on a bad show that had to go on the road because it flopped in New York. Among that contingent was Tawana's mother, Glenda Brawley, who left the sanctity of a Brooklyn church where she's been avoiding the law after refusing to go before a grand jury investigating the case. The Brawley advisors claim Governor Cuomo, Attorney General Robert Abrams, and other white New York politicians are racist. They have advised the 16-year-old black teenager not to cooperate with the state investigation of her claims that she was sexually and racially assaulted by a group of white men in Dutchess County last year. Alan Shartok spoke with Albany Mayor Thomas Whalen about the demonstration.
Well, I don't think much of it. I think that the best maneuver with the Reverend Sharpton is to try to ignore him and hope that he'll go away. I thought the way we treated him in Albany several months ago, which was very laid back, is really the way to... But you have to recognize that somebody like that wants a platform desperately. The only way that they can get it, or the only way they can get themselves recognized, is to create this type of a forum. And if you give it to him, you play into his hands.
But you did draw lines in Albany. You did arrest him.
Oh, we did. But that wasn't until 5:30 in the afternoon when he was blocking traffic going down State Street.
I sense, Tom, that he's less of a story here than he was in Albany.
Yeah, I think that the people look upon it as being some type of quick, not too intelligent display that has nothing to do with the Democratic Convention at all.
Reporter David Galletly spoke with Alan Shartok for his analysis of the convention and the Dukakis campaign.
I think the truth is that... Jesse Jackson is going to be a potential problem in this campaign, and if in fact he or his supporters feel that he's getting short shrift, I think that the whole thing, apple cart, could be overturned. It will be the most serious management program that Michael Dukakis will have to engage in this campaign. And not only that, but Jackson has troops who will try to embarrass him if he doesn't do what they want him to do, so that Jackson himself will have a problem, a potential problem here in terms of keeping his leadership intact in the way that it is. So I think that that probably will be one of the emerging stories in the campaign.
Dr. Alan Shartok. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Beth Angler.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen was at the convention as a delegate. Back in Albany, he spoke with Dave Galletly.
What do you think that Michael Dukakis has to do now to win this election?
I think Mike Dukakis has to address himself to the concerns and aspirations of people who have left the Democratic Party in the last couple of presidential elections. People generally who reside in middle and to some extent lower middle income suburban kind of areas, places like Cheektowaga outside of Buffalo and Greece outside of Rochester and maybe Menands outside of Albany, the kind of working people who were attracted to by Ronald Reagan's upbeat message for America.
The governor has said that New York is not going to be an easy state for Mike Dukakis to win.
Well, I don't think we want to take it for granted by any means, and we're going to be working very hard with the Dukakis campaign to carry New York for Governor Dukakis. But let's face it, if the Democrats are going to prevail, if he's going to win the presidency, he better carry New York. I think we should be confident that we will carry New York. A little tougher will be carrying California and Washington State and Oregon and Texas and Arkansas and places like that. So we're not going to take New York for granted by any means, but I think Governor Dukakis from an adjacent state of Massachusetts and who has been interested in the problems of the Northeast and an example, a shining example of the solution to those problems ought to be a very attractive candidate in New York.
New York had in one of the largest, if not the largest, delegation committed to Jesse Jackson. Do you think that the unity themes that have been called on these last few days are really meaningful? Do you think that the unity is real?
Yes, I think the unity is real. After all, Mike Dukakis and Jesse Jackson had 60-some debates. Never once did Dukakis lose his temper or engage in hyperbole or treat Jackson as anything other than a very competent, capable fellow candidate. And I think the New York delegation for Jackson, while the largest in the country, was among the most responsible. People like David Dinkins, the Manhattan borough president, Stan Hill, the union leader, and many others showed great leadership among the Jackson forces in the whole country. And when candidate Jackson wanted a negotiation over some of the things that concerned him, one of the people he turned to was Congressman Charlie Rangel. So our people played a major role in the final episode of the Jackson 88 campaign. I believe that they all were of a mind that he had to support our nominee, that they would do so here in New York enthusiastically.
A congressman who served in more districts in New York State than almost anyone in history has decided to call it quits. It means the end of an era in New York State politics. It also brought to light a controversy that could happen anywhere. 71-year-old Sam Stratton of Schenectady, who represented 13 counties at one time or another, says his health will not allow him to seek a 16th term in Congress. The announcement not only shocked residents of the 23rd District, which covers Albany and Schenectady counties, and parts of Montgomery and Rensselaer, it also led the way to his successor more or less taking part in a coronation. It all started with a statement from Stratton's son-in-law, Roger Mott.
Sam, as I say, has had 3 weeks of pretty extensive tests going on. He had a head-to-head discussion with the two doctors in the Washington, D.C. area who have been taking a look at him and trying to be as helpful and candid with him as they can. They sat with Sam and his wife, Joan, last Thursday afternoon and indicated, Congressman, these are preliminary indications. We got to do more tests, but we can tell you point blank right now, you in no earthly way, shape, or form should try to undertake not necessarily the rigors of a campaign, but the commitment to your constituency to serve for another 2 years in Congress. That was some good, hard advice that Sam went home and slept on, certainly for a couple of nights. A second factor that came into play is an arbitrary deadline that is established by New York State law, which takes effect at 5:00 tonight. If Sam Stratton did not decline the nomination of the Democratic and Conservative Party, which nominated him with the filing of petitions last Friday, if he didn't decline their nomination by 5:00 this evening, he would automatically be on the ballot and locked in that ballot as the nominee of the Democratic and Conservative Party.
Mott strongly denied that Stratton was stepping down because of the Defense Department procurement scandal that is brewing. CBS Television some weeks ago said that Stratton was one of three New York congressmen named by a source close to the investigation as being under scrutiny. However, Stratton was never named as a target of the probe. Stratton, who became the third-ranking Democrat on the powerful House Armed Services Committee, started his career as a city councilman in Schenectady. He then became mayor. He lost an election for the state assembly. He then went on to win 15 congressional elections. He did it despite all kinds of odds at times. The Republican-controlled legislature in the 60s made what became known as the Submarine District. It stretched from Schenectady all the way into central New York, ending around Seneca Falls. The GOP thought Stratton could never win that one. Well, he did, again and again. In 1970, the legislature merged his district with another occupied by a Republican. They thought that would do it. But Stratton beat the Republican and became the congressman for the Greater Capital District of New York. He continually won by bigger and bigger margins. Throughout his tenure, only sacrificial lambs ran against him. Strong Republicans felt they would wait till Stratton stepped down before they ran for the office. Stratton effectively prevented that by the timing of his announcement. He made it on the last day that he could legally get himself off the ballot. That meant a committee of vacancies lined up his replacement. For all intents and purposes, no other Democrat who wanted to succeed Stratton could enter the picture, and Republicans were left with the candidate they had picked to try to play David against Goliath. Leo O'Brien is the powerful head of the Albany County Democratic Committee. He picked Assemblyman Mike McNulty, and he got three other county chairmen to go along with him.
I see Mike McNulty doing an outstanding job in his fall campaign, and I see Mike McNulty going to Washington to represent us. And I think he's going to do an outstanding job because he's a known trooper, a known worker. He's not afraid of work. He'll do great by the people of the 23rd Congressional District.
The Republican chairman of Albany County cried foul. He is Peter Kahane.
They say no, but obviously the petitions, the deadline on the petitions was Thursday. You have a 5-week period for petitions, approximately. You had from June 7th through July 14th to collect petitions. July 14th was the last day that a candidate could collect petitions to get on the ballot. Obviously, 2 or 3 weeks ago, they must have known that Sam was sick, and obviously he is a sick man, and I can understand that. But obviously, they must have known before Sunday or Friday or whenever of this last week. It just seems all very convenient that the petitions were filed, killed any chance of a primary, and automatically their hand chosen candidate is the candidate of the party leaders, and the people have no say whatsoever.
Hugh Farley is a state senator from Schenectady. He's a Republican. His name had been mentioned as one who might like to run once Stratton decided to leave.
Well, I happen to believe Sam Stratton that his health reasons were kind of unfolding. I don't think Sam Stratton, up to the day he announced he wasn't going to run, really enjoyed backing out. I think if he was physically able, he would stay in Congress. The Democratic chairman, Mr. O'Brien, quote, swears that he didn't know about this until Sunday. So I think you have to accept that. Many feel that it was certainly a political stroke of genius, the way that it happened, because it paved the way for a candidate that they wanted, and it prevented any, I would say, perhaps better-known Republican candidate, not necessarily a better candidate, from seeking the office.
Peter Bagel is a 30-year-old Albany newcomer who will indeed run for the seat. He's the Republican who was asked if he is the strongest candidate that the GOP could put forth.
I certainly am right now. We've already spent nearly $20,000 on the campaign. We just filed our report with the Federal Election Commission to prove that. We collected nearly 11,000 signatures on our petition drive, and we only needed 1,250. It's a legitimate, strong campaign, and it will continue to be, and I'll continue to offer positive solutions to the problems affecting this area, especially in terms of jobs, the drug problem, and environmental protection.
A Democrat who was livid over the chain of events is Schenectady Mayor Karen Johnson. She did not like the fact that she never even had a chance to try to run because the party chairman acted so swiftly and secretly due to the legal restrictions when Stratton made his decision. Johnson was at the Democratic convention in Atlanta when it all happened.
What really disappoints me is that I think out of respect for Sam, an awful lot of people in the Capital District were not sniffing around looking for this job because they had respect for his position and, really wanted to have a chance at it when Sam finally retired. I think the timing is disgusting. I don't certainly think it's Assemblyman McNulty's doing or fault. But if it had been 2 weeks earlier, there could have been petitions. if Sam had been elected and then resigned, we would have had a special election, and in this way, there's really very little opportunity for anyone to get organized and
there's
really
a whole,
deal with it.
There's a whole theory of course, here that they knew exactly what they were doing, that they waited until this time, that the Committee on Vacancies became operative, that if they had gone a little bit longer, none of this would have been true, that Sam knew all along he was going to retire. This is a theory that we are hearing. Is there any possibility it's so?
Well, I don't have any inside information on that, but obviously, you know, I've been concerned about Sam's health for some time, and I think that, you know, I don't know who's been advising him. The story is that his family finally persuaded him to leave. I think Sam himself, deep in his heart, would have liked to see a real election for this, because I think he's a deep believer in democracy, and I think that's what we've been denied.
Karen Johnson, mayor of the city of Schenectady, talking to Alan Shartok at the convention in Atlanta. What happened in this situation can happen anywhere in New York if the circumstances were the same. Whether Stratton knew earlier that he wanted to quit is not known. His family insists, and so do the party leaders, that Stratton did not decide till the very last minute that he could no longer run. He will serve out the end of his term. In the midst of all of his wins, Stratton did suffer some setbacks. He tried to be the Democratic candidate for governor, but Robert Morgenthau got the nod. He tried to run for the U.S. Senate, but Bobby Kennedy got that pick. Nonetheless, Stratton will be remembered as a politician supreme who never forgot the little guy and handled the big guys as well. Governor Cuomo took a break from the Democratic convention to return to Albany and finish up some state business. Paul Rosenthal has this week's legislative notebook.
The governor has signed legislation designed to help close the projected budget deficit of $900 million. Along with spending cuts and other cost-saving measures, the bills authorize New York to join multi-state, multi-million-dollar lotteries to raise revenue. However, State Lottery Division spokesman Bill Knowlton says joining such a lottery is still quite a ways off.
What happens next is really we'll pick up and continue where we've been. We've been talking to a number of states for a couple of years about the possibility of a multi-state lottery. One actually got off the ground. A number of small states scattered across the country created the Lotto America and got off the ground. We had originally talked with some of those states. And since that time, we've been talking to some larger Midwestern states, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan amongst them. And we'll have to continue negotiating. The difficulty with being specific as far as where we are and how quickly things will happen is that each of the states has its own situation to deal with, its own legislative permission to be obtained. Some of them do have it, some of them don't. So it's we'll have to sit down now and continue talking, basically, and we'll try to get things going as rapidly as we can, but I can't say specifically when that'll be.
Bill Knowlton, spokesman for the New York State Lottery Division. That same bill also allows the lottery division to increase the prizes awarded in the daily lottery game, and as a result, increase lottery sales and boost New York's revenues. Cuomo also acted on more than a dozen other pieces of legislation. Included in the package of bills that the governor has signed is one that authorizes spending $25 million to help public and private school districts inspect for dangerous asbestos. Gail Irwin, legislative director of the New York State School Boards Association, spoke with Beth Engler.
Well, we're certainly pleased that the legislature and governor have made this additional money available. Schools have certainly had problems with asbestos, and the more money we can save in terms of asbestos costs and apply to the education of children is certainly welcome.
Now, how widespread is the problem?
Well, we have seen most of the school districts in the state with some sort of asbestos problem, and we've been grappling with it for the last several years. And with the federal legislation that requires management plans, this is an additional responsibility. And this is what the additional funding will be applied toward, is the management plans, so that school districts can get some offset from the state in paying for these plans.
Gail Irwin, the legislative director with the New York State School Boards Association. Irwin adds that the money will not be granted until October of 1989, but she is still pleased that they were able to receive the needed money. Included in that same bill is a proposal that will go to the voters to borrow $3 billion for highway repairs, a loan of $600 million from a special state fund set up with a 1986 tax surplus, and the provision of $11 million in tax breaks for financially strapped harness tracks. The measure also provides that minority and women-owned businesses will get a chance to win public works contracts. Another bill containing $106 million in cuts reduces the budgets of the legislature, the judiciary, Cuomo's executive chamber, and the offices of the state comptroller and the attorney general by 1.5%. The Assembly and Senate each agreed to cut $2 million from their pork barrel local spending projects. One of the major bills that has been signed by the governor establishes money laundering as a crime under New York State statutes. Here's Cuomo spokesman Francis Sheehan.
It's well known that criminals use cash as part of their organized criminal activity, and in order to use cash, they have to convert or launder their illegally earned cash in such illegal activities as running drugs or something like that, that they have to convert that money or launder it to make it manageable and to give it a legitimate appearance. The legislation the governor just signed will make it a criminal penalty in New York State to do so.
The bill establishes 4 degrees of money laundering, from Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. The degree of the offense depends on how much money is involved in the transaction and what the intent of the offender is. State legislators were off this week after leaving the Capitol and the long session with some unfinished business. Many are either on summer vacations or appeared at the Democratic National Convention in Atlanta. The unfinished business from the state legislature's departure may affect the wallets of 200,000 state workers. The Senate left town without acting on bills to ratify contract settlements between the state and its 12 bargaining units. The pact's call for 5% raises. Ron Tarwater of the Office of Employee Relations says the action means people will have to wait longer for their pay hikes. The raises are retroactive to June 1st. We talked with Joe McDermott, the head of the Civil Service Employees Association statewide organization, while he is in Atlanta for the convention. He is upset with the Senate.
Well, we're very concerned about their lack of activity. They're not hesitant to stay in session to pass their own pay raises when they're up for action, and we'd like just as much attention as the legislators get when they're concerned about their own pay raises. Our people don't earn as much money as they do, and they're counting on that increase, and they'd like to have it in their pocket, not spend it after vacation is over.
Well, the Assembly passed it, and the Senate is the one that failed. Do you see any particular reason that they did, or is it an oversight, or what?
Well, it's not an oversight. The week before they left town, I had conversations with the Senate counsel, and the pay bill was discussed, well, not at length, because neither one of us viewed it as a problem. I expected fully to see it passed before they went out for the recess.
New York State CSEA President Joseph McDermott speaking with reporter Don Decker. That's this week's Legislative Notebook. I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that's it for the Legislative Gazette this week. The show was produced by Beth Engler. She had help from Dave Galletly, Paul Rosenthal, and Alan Chartok. Alan will be back next week. Until then, we hope you've enjoyed the program, and we'll tune in again to hear what's happening in and around the Empire State. Sitting in for Alan, I'm Don Decker.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Public Radio in Albany. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the Legislative Gazette, a weekly newspaper on state politics with student internships available.